So who am I? I'm Trent Lloyd. I work for MySQL. Not everyone actually realizes MySQL is a company and it actually provides support and that sort of thing. I think most of the people here have probably figured that out by now, but a lot of people I talk to back in Perth, I say, I work for MySQL, and they say, what, really? That's a company? So a lot of people are interested here that we actually do provide commercial support services. I'm not here as a marketing aid today, though, but if you are interested in their support, you can look at our website, and there's plenty of information there. Yes, I work as a support engineer. I'm based in Perth in Australia, and there's a few of my contact details there. I'll have the slides up on my site at the end, so if you want to reference some of the links that I've gotten here and that sort of thing, you'll be able to do so. So as far as getting support from MySQL, there's a few ways you can do so, the first of which is obviously the commercial support we provide. So if you're a big company and you want to pay for support, it's especially useful sometimes, if you're trying to convince your manager you want to use MySQL and they say, well, you can't get support and we can't use that, we can pay Microsoft lots of money, right? So you can't actually pay MySQL for support, but by the same token, you can get community support. So there are forums, mailing lists, and IRC, which are all quite useful. And plus, if you know people that use MySQL, you can go and harass them as well. So basically, what I'm going to talk about today is just some of the general troubleshooting and things that you can look at. If you've got some kind of problem with the MySQL server, it's not working or it's not performing properly, or just the sort of basic information you can look at. So it's more aimed for anyone that actually runs a server more than writing applications. How many of you are sort of like either DBA or run your own server for your own website and that sort of thing? Right, most of you, that's good, because that's really what it's aimed for. And how many of you aren't really familiar with like troubleshooting and looking into things and that sort of thing? Yeah, less of you. So if I'm like too less technical, let me know, maybe I could go into a few other things, but it's just a general overview of the sort of information you get. It's fairly Linux specific. Who doesn't use Linux for their MySQL server? Fantastic. It is Linux conference, yeah, but having said that,
there,
yeah, well, so do I, but
not for sure.
Yeah, I don't use a Mac anymore. I'm on Linux now. I fear the world is trying to tell me something. Yeah. So the most important thing when it comes to trying to figure out some kind of problem with the MySQL server is to find the error log. This should be easy. And as a default MySQL setup, it's in the data directory, and it's just called hostname.error. And there's a few common examples of where it may be. But distributions decide that they want log files in different places, and all sorts of weird things happen, and you can end up with all sorts of places you can find the MySQL error log, usually in var log. So if you look for something called MySQL and var log, it's not too bad. But sometimes they get intermingled into VarLog messages and VarLog dim and .log, and you have to go grepping for things, and it makes life a bit miserable. But it just depends what operating system you're running and whether you've got an official MySQL distribution and that sort of thing. So there are also a couple other logs that MySQL has, not to be confused with, the first of which is the general query log, which basically just shows all the queries that are going through the server. Not a good thing to enable on a production server that's busy, because it spends quite a few resources actually writing those logs out, and so your server sort of ends up in the ground if you do that. That's an example of a general query log. So you can see just, client connected, it issued a query, and it left. So if you see that, that's not the error log you're looking for, and it's probably not going to help you. And the other kind of log there is the slow query log, and basically you can configure the slow query log to log all the queries that, funnily enough, are taking too much time, which is configurable. So you can see at the top, I've got the configuration options. The first one is the path to the slow log file, and the second one is how many seconds you want to log the query after. Oh. Okay, not buzzing. So if you wanted to log every query that takes more than 4 seconds, and that way you can find queries that are taking a long time and causing your pages to run slowly, and usually you can optimize those by adding an index or doing whatever else you need to optimize that. So that's the slow query log, and that looks like that. And again, this can be useful in performance tuning, but if you're trying to find some kind of general problem with the server, it may not be all that good. So you're really looking for the error log, which I mentioned earlier. Any questions so far? If anyone wants to ask a question, feel free to ask. How many of you are familiar with, use the error log a lot? Some people? Yeah. Looking at log files is generally a good way to go. It's a good start most of the time. So these are some commands that you can run. And they basically just give you some information back. The top four are from MySQL itself. And this applies to MySQL 5.0. If you're running MySQL 4.0 and 4.1, you have to adjust them slightly. You have to take like, the global out of status and the engine out of InnoDB, but you can find that sort of information online. And the second lot of commands are a bunch of Linux commands you can run which return all sorts of interesting information about memory usage and what processors are doing and how much disk space you've got available. And some of those you need to install packages for. So I think on Debian you've got to install like sysstat to get iostat and stuff like that. But you can usually find them on your distribution of choice. And so, right. These are some common sorts of questions that I get through support. Any of you sort of had this kind of problem before? You know, my site's slow, I like click on a link and 20 seconds later it comes back and, you know, I just got hit on dig or something, so, you know, that's why it's taking such a long time. Or in some cases, the server just, you can't connect anymore and the site's down as well. And we also get some people who just don't know how to install MySQL. I suspect most of you aren't in that sort of category. But, you know, we help with all those sorts of cases and it's just generally a case of pointing to the right list of instructions on how to install MySQL. So the first of the outputs that you can look at is the variables output, and I'll just try and switch over here. Okay, so now this is kind of, I guess you can all read that at least. So when you run show variables, it outputs a whole bunch of stuff. These are mainly settings. So this is influenced by the my.cnf file and all the settings you put in there. And you can change some of the runtime as well. And you see there's a whole lot of stuff. I'm obviously not going to go through all of them now, but there's a lot of things that you can fill around with and get information on as to whether you've got certain storage engines enabled and that sort of thing. But yeah, so you basically just log in as root, you run show global variables, and you get back all of that information. And I'll come back a little bit later as to what some of those mean and what you can do with them. And I suspect that... OpenOffice is broken again. Oh, there's another... Oh, right, sweet. That wasn't obvious. All right. So that's variables. The next one is the status output. And rather than settings, this is actually a list of... Oops. A list of sort of just general statistics on what the server's been doing and that sort of thing. And so if we scroll up here... There's quite a lot of stuff. Some of it's kind of obvious, some of it's less obvious. So like, you know, bytes received and bytes sent. That's fairly, you know, self-explanatory. And there's a whole bunch of these com, which will basically tell you how many times you've executed a statement of a certain type. So you can see, you know, obviously com delete means you deleted a, you know, ran a delete row, and com delete multi in the case you've deleted multiple rows with the same statement and that sort of thing. And if you scroll down further, you can see some more useful stuff we might get back to later, such as created temp disk tables, which tells you how many disk tables have been created on the disk. And there's also some other statistics to do with the key buffer in MySAM and the InnoDB buffers and how much memory is being used and how much is free. And again, I'll cover a few of those a little bit later as to exactly what to do with those. The next kind of a status output you can have a look at is the InnoDB status. So if you're using the InnoDB engine, who doesn't know the difference between InnoDB and other stuff? Okay, so basically MySQL has different storage engines. They sort of serve different purposes. So there's a MyISAM, which is the sort of the original one. And they basically just all store data on the disk in a different way. And they do stuff in memory different ways. And so some are faster for some applications. MyISAM and InnoDB are probably the most popular. There are lots of other sort of specialized ones, including one called Archive, which compresses data as it puts it on disk. And there's the MySQL cluster, which is a storage engine, which obviously you can cluster machines together. And there's a whole bunch of them. So InnoDB is a fairly popular one because it's transaction safe and ACID compliant and all that sort of fun. And so it has its own status output, which you can see here. And it tells you all sorts of interesting information. So it'll tell you current transactions that are running in just... this is a fairly boring server, unfortunately, that I've logged into at the moment, but It'll tell you things like the number of rows that are being modified and the number of rows that are being read in. And it'll also give you a list of all the transactions that are running and what the query is and what that's currently doing, whether it's fetching data or it's waiting for a lock or it's sending the data back and that sort of thing. And there's also information on the memory usage and how many rows a second you're modifying and that sort of thing. And the next command we have is iostat, which is a Linux command. And basically that just returns information on what your disks are doing. One of the most important statistics you can get from iostat is the IO weight value. And the IO weight value is there. In this case, it's 32.37. It basically just tells you how much of the time the system is waiting for things to happen on disk. So it generally indicates that you've got some kind of disk performance bottleneck. Not always, but it's a good indicator that if the IO weight number is high, then you've got to look at, you know, maybe you're doing too much with your disk for some reason. And another one we have is VMstat, which tells you what you're doing with memory. And another important thing to look at in VMstat is the columns called SI and SO. Sure. And they tell you how much data is being swapped in and out of memory. Generally speaking, on a database server, it's bad to have stuff being paged in and out of memory to disk because it slows your disk down. And it's much more efficient for the MySQL server to figure out what it wants to get off disk rather than the operating system trying to page stuff in and out of memory. The next command, which I suspect most people, if they're familiar with Linux, be familiar with, is top, which just generally tells you what processes are running, how much CPU they're using, and that sort of thing. So in this case, we can see we've got some PHP processes running. Obviously, you'd see MySQL on a busy MySQL server. And it also shows you the memory information on the top. So it shows you how much memory is available, how much you're using, how much swap you're using. If this was actually a real database server, you shouldn't be using any swap. That's a bad idea. But in this case, it's a shared shell server, so. You can't actually see it. Yeah, I know. I couldn't see it before either. It works, but. You prefer it like that? Yeah, we can drop the lights back down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, better. Okay, sorry, I didn't think about that. I apologize for that. So top has lots of useful information in it. And the next one is DF, and you're most probably all familiar with DF as well. It just tells you how much disk space you have free. A pretty common problem with MySQL servers is that the disk's filled up. And that can often happen because the binary logs have been chewing up disk space you didn't realize and that sort of thing. So, are there any questions so far as information gathering and what other places you might look, or anyone curious about anything? Nothing at all? All right, I guess I'll move on then. So I've got an example case, which is that my site is running slow. So in a lot of cases, people are running content management systems. I saw from the introduction earlier, a lot of people run content management systems on MySQL. How many of those are here now? A few. I guess we may have thinned a few of them out.
Sorry.
Oops. But content management systems are pretty common, and they tend to do a lot of queries and that sort of thing, and so they can result in the site running slow if some of those are coming back slow. And so if we want to have a look at the MySQL server and say, why is it running slow? How can we make it faster? We can use some of this information that I spoke about earlier. And so the first thing we might look at is iostat. And so this is the same iostat we saw before, and the kind of off the edge of the screen, but anyway. The biggest thing that we can notice in this case is that the IO weight is high, which generally says to me that obviously maybe our disks aren't fast enough or we're writing more out to disk than we think we need to. And so we'd like to investigate why that is. And so if we have a look at the MySQL status output, we can see that there's actually a lot of temporary disk tables being created. And so you can just use show global status and you can actually tell it to look at a specific variable. And so in the case of temporary disk tables, that means that when MySQL is running a query, it got some data back and I had to sort it or order it or something like that. And so I'd have to create a temporary table to do that, but then it couldn't hold that in memory for some reason, so I had to write it out to disk. And so if you're writing lots of temporary tables to disk, then that obviously starves the disk of I/O to actually read more data back in and can result in the whole system running fairly slowly. Who's familiar with temporary disk tables and that you can sort of tune settings for how much memory they can use and that sort of thing? A couple people, yeah. So there's a couple of settings in relation to temporary disk tables. So in this case, there's one called max heap table size and one called max temp table size. And basically, the lower limit of those two is how big a temporary table can be. And I think the default is like 32 meg or something like that. And so if you've got a lot of rows that you're trying to sort, then you might go over that limit, and then the MySQL server is forced to write that table out to disk instead of into memory. And so you can set those settings up higher if you're doing a lot of queries that are really returning that many rows that they're using that much memory. However, another common case is that the memory tables can't actually store text columns and blob columns and that sort of thing. And so if you've got an application with text columns that it needs to put in temporary tables, then it's always going to have to write those out to disk. And obviously, you're always going to have performance problems with that. So what you can do about that is you can look at changing the data types in your tables. So you can look at using perhaps a varchar instead of a text column, or perhaps not selecting that information out in those big sorts. And obviously, the other thing you can do is you can raise the maximum heap table size and the maximum temp table size so that you can fit more of that in memory. Yeah, so basically the problem is that if your application is not using it, or why is there a limit?
Well, put it another way, why is this sitting here?
Right, so basically it's to stop you using up too much memory. So your database server's obviously got, say, 8 gig of RAM, and you want to handle, say, 100 connections at once for 100 pages that are loading. So the problem is if all of them create a 100 megabyte temporary table, you're going to run out of RAM really quickly. So the settings there, basically, if it gets past a certain size, say 16 megabytes, then it'll actually write that table out to disk rather than keep it in RAM, so that way it's not going to starve the server of memory. So obviously if you've got a lot of RAM, you can afford to keep more in memory, so you can just raise that setting. If in the case you don't have enough RAM, maybe you need to buy more RAM for your application.
You need a really good understanding of all the different uses of memory in MySQL on your application to get this right.
I could probably talk for another like 20 minutes on managing memory allocation within MySQL. There's quite a few things you can tune. A lot of people, who here sort of installs MySQL and doesn't touch the configuration file? I know a lot of people do that. I did that for the longest time.
80% of my customers do this.
Yeah. And so...
That's a low estimate. You can make a case for it being a bad thing, not a good thing. Should the thing look after itself a bit more than that?
Yeah, there are some people that argue that. In some ways, it can be better. Like, in some cases, like... The MySQL server may be able to assume that it has all of the memory, but in some cases you might want to tell it that, well, you don't want it to use all of your memory. Maybe you're running your web server and your MySQL server on the same machine. And plus, I think Microsoft SQL Server sort of tries to figure things out on its own. I don't know how well that actually goes.
DB2 is self-tuning to a large degree. You still have to give it some guidelines. With MySQL, it's not just what other applications might need, but it's also inside MySQL, there's trade-offs. You might want to have it use more buffer for one thing instead of for another. And that is not something necessarily that the server can decide. I mean, based on the maximum number of connections, you can decide, you can make deductions based on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you have many connections, you can assign fewer per connection buffers.
Yep.
If you have fewer connections, you can make it bigger. But that's a basic trade-off, but there's many more aspects to it.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting those skills is more useful.
Yeah.
The cool thing is with MySQL compared to some other database systems is that MySQL actually runs remarkably well without tuning.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, 80% or even more of my customers run without tuning and actually do pretty well most of the time. There are major websites out there that run without tuning. Doesn't mean it's good, but it means they survive, which is amazing in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you can do so much better with the tuning and actually good design, as we talked about this morning, which is even more important, but tuning helps.
Yeah, if you're not running like a busy server that is using a lot of the resources of the machine, you can generally get away with the defaults or very basic tuning. But if you're like running a really high load website and you want to try and get that last bit out of your servers, then setting a lot of those things can help.
There's a recent example of a guy in Brisbane working for a telco billing. He wrote some telco billing stuff in PHP, and he had a query that took 14 hours. I was working at MySQL at the time, so I wasn't actually able to do free consulting or moonlight consulting elsewhere. And it was at a party somewhere. We were at the Pancake Manor in Brisbane, so I said, okay, I'll give you one server parameter. I'll tell you what to set it at. And if you get the query in the range of 30 minutes, you owe me a cake. So I gave him one parameter, and he owed me cake, which I got, and I should eat a big cheesecake. And he gave me, he was a bit late with that, so he gave me a little cake as well. Interesting. I like chocolate and I like cake. You can't really tell, but yeah. Now the guess, of course, we used InnoDB, so now for you guys to guess which parameter we changed. Anyway, it went from 14 hours to 34 minutes, just with one parameter. And of course, there's much more to tune on that server, obviously. And it wouldn't be just a server, it would be also table design, query design, indexes, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But you can do a lot of good sometimes, just tweaking one thing. And of course, for him, it was the difference between a functional application and a complete disaster with his employer, because his billing cycle couldn't take 14 hours because he had too much data coming in. It ran longer than it should have. Yeah. So
which parameter was it?
Well, guess. It's an InnoDB parameter. And it wasn't a sort buffer, because it's not InnoDB.
Makes connections?
That's not InnoDB either. It was the InnoDB buffer pool size, which is like the main case for InnoDB. It caches data as well as index pages. There we go. The main one is there. And you basically, if you're running an InnoDB only system, you run as much memory as possible. That's like the basic idea. It's not quite that, but it's a global buffer. And I just told him how many gigs do you have. He said like 4 gig. Are you using for anything else? No. I said, okay, make it a gig or 2 gig. And that's what he did. And just put it in the configuration file. He said 1G or 2G. That was fine. The point is that the ballpark figure changed dramatically. The execution time wouldn't have changed much between 1 gig or 2 gig. The point is, how big is that? It's 8 meg. From 8 meg to a gig is significant. So most of his data and index pages will have ended up in memory, and that makes lookups quicker on the complicated query that did lots of lookups repeatedly. So that was that.
Yeah, so the default setting is pretty conservative. There's another one for MySAM called the key buffer size, which is a fairly similar thing, which where it keeps all the indexes. Though in the case of InnoDB, it keeps data in there as well. So, yeah. Any further questions? No? Okay. It's going to end up shortish.
The middle one is actually temp table size.
Which one?
Max.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right.
I know you redid your slides.
This is my 1 hour redoing of my slides. So yes, just temp table size. You're correct. Yeah. So that's sort of the end of what I prepared. But
too much. It depends on. We can't really see you on video, but people here are more important. So
right. Yeah.
So without you can see, or
it Trent just becomes flat.
Well, without light, with light.
Without light.
Okay. So we can leave it on.
Yeah. I've finished most of my slides now. So. Yeah. You probably don't want that. So this is most of what I. That is most of what I had prepared in my sort of 2 hours I had to finish that up. So if there's anything anyone wants to sort of discuss or they're curious about, if there's any problems people have had that they have or haven't solved. Or
we probably need to go on to the next item now. We've got lots of time at the end.
Okay.
At the end of the day,
sure.
Open questions on anything.
All right, not a problem. And if you want to chat to me or whatever I'm about, feel free to ask me any questions or anything like that. Thank you. Oh yeah, I have all my talks on my site. I'll put this one up there shortly. So if you want to get any of the links that I had in there and that sort of thing, you can do so. So thank you, Asus. Yeah, it could be number two, yeah.
Impressive that actually works that quickly and projects. That's
Cool. And well,
it runs Linux,
yeah.
And it runs Linux.
It's Zandros, unfortunately, but.
It's a Debian, it's okay.
Yeah. I'll put a Ubuntu in there later. Yeah, just got it at Meijer like 2 hours ago.
You can now buy a Linux box at Meijer.
Yeah, that is quite impressive, actually, yeah. Yeah. I know Meijer had an exclusive contract for like a little while, but I think that's run out now, so. Yeah. Should probably get the microphone back here. Yeah, that's my plan. Anyone got an Ubuntu USB key? Okay. I will pass the baton.
In that case, maybe go for longer, because.
Yeah, which means the problem is that other people want to walk in here, which I do know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe we should wait with you then. Maybe we can do open questions just for...
Okay, I didn't think we ran out of time yet. Yeah,
no, no, we haven't. Until
2:30.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know that people want to walk into all of this.
Wow.
So otherwise, I would...
A million messages.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Just do open support questions. Free
sure.
Support!
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, there's one called, I haven't used it personally, I think it's called SAR or something like that.
SAR,
yeah, and it like logs that over a long period of time.
There's a new thing called CollectD, which is pretty cool. Yeah, it'll grab a whole lot of things. People have been using it to grab a whole MySQL variable, really easy. It's like four different commands in the default config that sets it up. And it'll work distributedly and send all the data back to a main server.
What was that called?
CollectD.
Yeah, and that's useful to have because a lot of the time when people have these problems, they'll write in and say, my site was running slow, but it's fine now.
Yeah.
And at which point we sort of say, well, it's a bit hard. You can go back, but if you can't see some of the, like, you know, the memory usage has gone through the roof or the disk usage has gone through the floor, I guess, as it were, then, you know, it's sometimes it's harder to figure that stuff out. And you can rely on some of the historical stats, but it's obviously much better to look at a problem as it's happening than it is to look at it later.
If you're in a Debian or a Ubuntu box,
yeah.
Sorry, what was the name of the other one? SAR.
No, CollectD is the one I'm talking about. SAR is the other one.
Sure. Any further questions?
Steve, anything?
Sure.
I believe that MySQL will be brought up by Sun. Can we get a change?
Yeah, so the question is regarding Sun's acquisition of MySQL. It's obviously only just happened, and they're still waiting on antitrust regulatory approval. So that's going to close up, they say sort of late Q1, early Q2. I guess that makes like March, April-ish. So at the moment, we're still MySQL. Obviously, we'll become part of Sun, in a few months, I guess. No immediate plans for big changes, but...
We'll probably get renamed to Java MySQL.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm currently informed they intend to keep the branding and that sort of thing.
The name traditionally has been SunDB, as in the product that Sun doesn't have.
Yeah.
Everything at Sun comes under the Java suite now. So
yeah.
Even the NASDAQ ticker has been
Yes. Yeah, so... Sun is very much committed to open source. There are absolutely no plans to change the current... openness of MySQL and that sort of thing. In fact, some people think it may even get more open because Sun have just gone a blitz and like released a whole lot of their stuff recently. Sun's obviously not, they've had some trouble in the past, but very recently just they've obviously started open source Java, they've open sourced Open Solaris, which is obviously a big part of their market. They're very much committed to open source, and so the message is that it won't be getting closed up or anything like that. Obviously, even if it was, it's still GPL, so you can still take the current version. But yeah, there's no plans at all to close it up. It'll still be available for free. Yeah, so that's the MySQL Enterprise Monitor. That's currently proprietary. Only our enterprise subscribers can get that. Whether that'll be opened up, I don't know. I can't answer that. Maybe you can cross your fingers and hope.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of stuff to plug into Navios, which neatly fits into everything else you do.
Yep.
And there is also open alternatives to the monitoring thing specifically. So yeah.
There are plugins to Cacti and stuff as well if you want to graph things.
It depends on what you want and need and so on. Yeah.
Yeah, the Enterprise Monitor does do some nice and interesting stuff, so if that did get open source at some point, I guess that'd be a plus for most people, but yeah, currently that's closed source.
It's not a matter of MySQL not wanting to open source it the choice not to open source it is a strategic decision. It creates a need that can then be solved with MySQL Enterprise. So it's a business decision, and probably Sun will stick with that same business decision for the time being, unless the revenue needs change there.
Yeah.
So I don't see it changing. And I mean, I'm not a MySQL employee, so I don't have a particular need for any of it.
I have no official stance on that, other than maybe cross your fingers and maybe become available, but yeah.
What about Sun? I mean, I'm no longer a Microsoft. Microsoft employee either, nor Google, nor anything.
Something next week.
Yeah.
Visited, not employee, and I didn't do a job interview. Anyway, I'm not a MySQL employee anymore, but I'm a shareholder. Speaking from that perspective, and as a MySQL user and someone who does training consulting, I'm interested in the continued existence of MySQL, because I know that a lot of people use it, and of course it's a revenue for me, knowing a bit about MySQL. If MySQL disappears, that's not good for my business, at least in the short term. I think the Sun acquisition is good because MySQL was heading for an IPO on NASDAQ. Now, if you think about that, that makes sense because the venture capital investors needed to get their money back at some point. They weren't in a hurry. They were really good. They understand open source. They had a long-term view. So this is Index Ventures, Benchmark Capital, and a couple of others. So Danny Reimer, who also did Skype, and a number of other people. They've been really good, but at some point they want their money back and lots of it, like 10, 20 times what they put in, obviously. Yeah, that's the idea. And MySQL being a bit of a success story and kind of poster boy of open source business company should make some money for them. On NASDAQ, they're really small fry in the marketplace. Like an organization like Oracle or Microsoft, for business reasons, could just buy up a majority of the shares and essentially do a hostile takeover without even bothering to do any bids, and kill the thing, which makes perfect business sense. And I mean, Oracle as well as Microsoft have a good track record of buying competitors and murdering them. And that makes business sense. But it's not good for MySQL if you really care about the product. So
it does seem pretty hard for someone to buy Sun.
I could have bought my shares for maybe a lot of money, but it doesn't actually help my business.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with Sun. It seems someone else called it a safe haven, and it might not actually be bad. Sun is big enough to not be bought out, murdered in the short term, in terms of how they run their business, and I have no idea. Over the last year, I've wondered what Sun's business model was. Well, then what did they actually sell? They're trying to work that out themselves. They do lots of different things. But they seem to be doing okay. They just put out their, what is it, quarterly reports or something. I think something went down, but their profits went up.
It was like a $200 billion quarterly profit or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was just quarterly profit. Anyway, they're more profitable than they were last quarter, and they're doing okay for themselves. And they seem, in terms of company culture, to match MySQL fairly well. I know some people working in Sun, and we've exchanged some thoughts, and I know, of course, how MySQL works in Sun. I think it's actually a very good match. My bet over the last couple of years would have been Novell as a potential buyer. Well, Novell hasn't done so well with the Azusa acquisition, so I'm happy that didn't happen. I think Sun is pretty good. We'll have to see how it develops, but I didn't guess on this one, and I was actually quite surprised, but pleasantly surprised. So now we'll have to see. And of course, I eagerly await my check from Jonathan Ford, which I'll take a photo of then.
Yeah.
I will not frame it. It's a good house deposit, so that's good.
Yeah, any further? Sure.
Sorry, I apologize for the newness of this question, if it is.
Hey, welcome, welcome.
The question I'm having is managing SQL connections. So we've got a limit of 500 or something, MySQL connections. And we want to kind of manage them, make sure there's always a small pool available for certain type of modules, and cut other modules off if they start being called too often and start using up too many connections. Are there any tools or anything available to help manage that?
In your grant statements, you can actually specify a maximum number of connections for a specific user. Yes, for a user. Now that doesn't limit the total number on that level, but if you know what your applications are doing, you could limit them. You could each limit them and then make sure that you have enough left over. There's always one connection from localhost available if you log in as root. That's always available. So if you set up 500 connections, it's actually 501. If you do a local socket connection for root. Otherwise it gets a bit tricky. You could probably get proxy to do something.
I made a few scripts that check.
There you go. Proxy man.
But it's in production environment, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't want to try the proxy.
Not yet.
Yeah, the max connections we use is probably your best bet then.
Probably the Mac, I forget what it's called, but if you look in the grant statements, there's a number of options that hardly ever get used, but you can set the maximum number of connections that a single user can have open at any time.
Mm-hmm.
You can also set the maximum number of queries that they can run per hour and that kind of nonsense. This has actually been used at ISPs. There's a big ISP in Germany called Slunz. They have like 50 or 60,000 like login users, and they each get PHP web space and a database. And Slunz wanted to actually limit the way they actually interacted with the database for obvious reasons. So they each got a couple of connections to the database and maximum number of blah queries per hour. So that's why those things were put into the server. They actually paid for that addition at the time, it was a couple of years ago. So in any version, I think MySQL 4 or 4.1 and up will have that.
The user thing may be tricky because the modules kind of call each other.
Is this from like one content management system or?
It's kind of, yeah.
Right. So they're not logging in as different users? You may find that I think it really comes down to application-specific sort of thing.
Yeah.
You may be able to actually limit it within your application, how many processes are running at once in your outbound queue and your inbound queues and stuff like that.
Well, like in Apache, you can tell exactly what the maximum is on the website. So you can control it from that end.
The inbound queue, we can control the inbound, which is kind of the cascading effect of what's going on.
The connections that you need to keep available, would they do select only or would they also update and insert? Okay. If it were select only, you could run a replication slave, and then you know that you have that available, and they would have all the data available for select. But of course, if you're doing updates, there's a problem. So that was just an intermediate thought. Yeah, it's probably an application-specific solution. Anyone else any thoughts on this? No? Other questions? 15 minutes left. Come on.
Sure.
Any comments on any of the web-based or graphical sort of performance monitoring tools from MySQL?
The ones from us or from anyone? Or
from you? Or?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's obviously the MySQL Enterprise Monitor that we have, but that's not publicly available. There's another commercial one called YOG or something.
SQL YOG.
Yeah, I've not used that personally.
There's a free version and an enterprise version or something. SQL.
It's called YOG.
Monyog.
SQL Monyog is the query.
It's the query thing. Okay. So browse to Monyog. Monyog. YOG. There's also my talk. Not quite graphical. There's quite a few. What you probably want to do is browse to.
Actually, have you guys seen what the enterprise monitor looks like?
No.
He can't do the quick demo. Can you do the quick demo?
Do you log it? Have a login to the? I don't know. It has like a lot of graphs in it, and it has rules to alert you on performance things. So if it realizes that you're running out of memory in an area, or that you've got too many just temporary tables being created, it'll actually fire off an alert, and it can email that to you, or do an SNMP trap to like your HP OpenView or whatever. Sorry, I think you were trying to say something.
It's just the people talking over each other and miss the names of the files.
MySQL Enterprise Monitor. That's the solution from MySQL, and Monyog is another. I think apparently there's a free version and a commercial version. That's by an external company. So it's Monyog, and then there's MyTop. MyTop.
My
Am I supposed to do something magical?
No, it just magically works. Yeah.
It's MySQL Enterprise Support.
Yeah.
It's part of the subscription package, so you have it as long as you
want.
No, but do you get it with basic? I can't remember. I think
you
do.
Not for replication. He would want it for replication.
How much do
you... Okay.
You can do better.
Do you know?
Yeah.
I should probably not give you the passwords to the
yes.
login.
If you're monitoring not just MySQL, but also other stuff, look at things like Nagios because it can actually monitor multiple things, and it plugs into that infrastructure. And there's lots of Perl scripts that people have written, lots of MySQL around the planet. As an example, Nagios is not the only one.
Yeah.
Enterprise monitor looks very shiny, as you'll see in a moment, but it's only as well. So that's the trade-off you need to make. You're looking at multiple things at one thing.
Your battery running low?
No, I just made it.
No. In the meantime, any further questions?
So that's sort of a login.
Short off, yeah. On a demo.
This actually has 6 servers attached to it, if I can log in. It's slow, but...
If anyone's curious,
because it's being tunneled to halfway around the world, and I'm encrypting my traffic, which is why it's even slower.
Yeah, MySQL Enterprise subscriptions range from about 600 to 5,000 US a server.
Very nice looking charts, obviously. There are 5 servers attached, and it tells you all sorts of errors. And the interesting thing about it telling you errors is if you click on it, it tells you how to fix the errors. So it tells you what's gone wrong. It's got a very good database of information as to what's gone wrong with your MySQL database.
How many rules does it have now? It used to be like 60?
It's got way more than 60 rules
now.
So what's
the number?
I don't know the number, but it's got way more. Because we've just released a new version.
Yeah, okay.
Do you know the number?
You can see there, the expression.
Yeah,
it tells you what's doing wrong. It calculate whether there's a problem or not.
Yeah.
So and it tells you how often it happens.
It's very nifty. It's cool stuff.
You can also create your own rules, like if you have something you want to monitor and alert on and graph. It doesn't do that now. That's something they're working on.
Yeah.
I think they're hoping to get that out sometime this year, like actual looking at queries, where your performance problems are and that sort of thing. So that's on the to-do list, but it's not available now.
That's easy to capture.
Yeah.
Because you can detect the table scan. So if you do a show status before and after you run the query, you actually can tell.
Interestingly enough, you can obviously add your own rules. It tells you it's monitoring 5 instances on 2 hosts. Out of here, you've given like 100 hosts. It depends on how many you buy as a license. I'm not sure how much this costs. You should ask MySQL sales.
Yeah.
It is subscription based, and if you're worried, like you're running this in an environment that does not want to connect to the external internet to verify your licenses, there is an offline option available as well. So,
yep.
How easy is it to turn off?
You can just go and untick them.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy.
I can untick that and unschedule it or disable it.
And you can do that on a per server or like on a group basis as well.
For example, I saw this at October last year, and it was giving so-called error indications that weren't actually...
Errors. Yeah, it has some interesting ones that don't always apply to some situations.
How easy is it to turn that off? Because we can find a way to turn it off.
It should be just... Here, under the advisors of the events, you just be able to disable it. Like if I tick.
Yeah. I think if you hit the plus sign.
If I say I decide I don't want this anymore, I can just click disable.
Right.
And it should disable it. Well, I'll disable it now and re enable it because I know other people use this demo account.
So in some cases, you can fix things, some cases,
disabled.
You just turn them off. Yeah.
And. Probably enable it because we do want it to work.
Replication tab too. Hit the replication tab too.
Yeah, the new feature of the enterprise monitor is the replication feature where it actually goes through your servers. It actually detects replication slaves and masters automatically.
And that's only Platinum, isn't it?
Again, you have to ask a MySQL sales consultant.
I'm
not sure. Oh, you can check that. Okay, please. I don't know. What you get for how much money.
Sorry.
It's not open source, so I don't use it much.
With the rules that you apply there, is there basically a one-to-one correlation for each of the config options?
No.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Not a one-to-one correlation.
They're combined, yeah. So I think that may have been the problem. They've combined it, and some things you weren't able to turn off because you turn off the whole group.
Fair enough. And I guess that's something you could, file as a binary product, and they are planning to improve this.
You don't have to go question features.
Hmm?
I can never remember the URL to this page.
Ah, yes.
Feature.
We ask our website. How to buy, maybe.
No, it's on the left.
Yeah?
Production support.
Yes, there.
Two.
Down. Yeah. Yep.
And I think it has the matrix there, which says what should... question.
Yeah.
Problem resolution.
So you can tell we don't actually use enterprise much. Like, I work in community, so I never actually touch
the
enterprise
page.
Software.
I have it written down somewhere, so.
I once reviewed the enterprise monitor when the replication.
So you can see the levels up here. So basically, your basic subscription is $600 a year per server, and up to platinum, which is $5,000 a year per server.
You need this.
Yeah, and so replication.
Yes, but it doesn't include the replication advisor.
Yeah, so that's
replication advisor is the.
It comes with gold.
$2,999.
Yeah. So if you have replication servers, you need to get gold for that. But all the other stuff that tells you, like, your table scans and your memory usage and.
And I think the schema advisor, the performance advisor, might actually be a human being, possibly.
Yes.
You actually get consulting for that. Which is why you pay $5,000.
And if you're interested in performance tuning support, that's only available at Platinum as well. So.
Or you call me.
Or you can speak to Iron, yeah.
And you can pay me for a lot of hours before you get to that.
Yeah, he accepts payment in cheesecake. Only.
Cheesecakes?
He does not like Australian dollars, he just wants cheesecake.
Cheesecakes, vodka, whatever. cold hard cash is fine too. PayPal, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm slightly cheaper than that per hour, so, yeah.
And have you guys seen Workbench as well?
I'll show Workbench.
Yeah, sure.
Workbench
actually have to boot this stuff.
You have 6 minutes.
Yeah. Workbench will be available there, open source, but. There's some features that will only be available if you're an enterprise subscriber.
I'm going to show some Windows application.
Yeah. So I'm going to kill Firefox because I know Vista won't start if Firefox is running.
As Stuart mentioned earlier. What's my train of thought now?
So I need to start VirtualBox.
Oh yeah, Linux support and macOS support and other platforms for basketball Workbench is coming, but. Probably not until later this year.
So for what it's worth, Workbench is actually written in managed C sharp, which is actually basically Mono, but Mono hasn't got far enough that it can just work.
Okay.
What's that based on?
Oh, hang on, I just have to disable something. VirtualBox doesn't like KVM.
So this is why the virtualization mini conference was empty, because it doesn't work, or?
Well, Vista's going to boot, and you'll slowly notice the memory usage going up like crazy, because Vista does something really smart where it pre-allocates all the RAM first. So if you give it 1 gigabyte of RAM, it just pre-allocates it. Ooh.
What text VirtualBox based on?
Hmm?
What virtualization are you using? Like Xen, or?
No, this is VirtualBox. It's different from Xen or KVM. It's not even QEMU.
Oh, it's just
KVM is QEMU.
Right.
So, Windows should start, I hope. Oh, that's a good sign. It is Microsoft.
Welcome to Microsoft ConfAU.
Workbench is a fairly nice tool. There are two versions for Workbench. One's the free open source version and one's some paid version. Giuseppe, do you know what comes with the paid version? I have not actually used the paid version, I've only used the free version.
I think one of the major things is that the paid version will connect to a server live.
And decompose the server for you.
Yeah, whereas with the open source one, you basically got to provide like a MySQL dump.
And I think the option to print might only be in the paid version, I'm not sure of that either. And it's a beta, so if you want to get the paid version, you've got to go online and...
Workbench doesn't have the suite that includes the administrator and the migration toolkit and
that's separate. That's just GUI.
That's not yet. Eventually, things like administrator and query browser will be deprecated and integrated into things like Workbench. And administrator will probably be integrated to things like the enterprise monitor. For what it's worth, they don't really work very well on modern Linuxes now anyway.
Yeah.
It's a fairly unsupported tool with a lot of patches.
Fairly unsupported.
currently an administrator and data migration assistant. I think it's the workbench.
The migration assistant should still be there.
Yeah.
So I need to log in.
I'm surprised Vista runs under that. I'm gonna have trouble like getting Vista run end of it.
I've lost my mouse. Perfect.